And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM. And we're very, very fortunate to have on the line with us right now, James Clark. James, can you hear me?
I can.
Wonderful. That means we've got you on his cell phone. He's just leaving the courthouse, of course, because of all the work he's doing on the campaign to allow George Galloway to speak in Canada. That was a tour we promoted on this program that I was involved in organizing in Hamilton, and it was a tour that our government canceled by banning this British MP from entering Canada. Now, James is a well-known anti-war organizer and civil liberties activist from the Toronto Coalition to Stop the War. And as I said, James, you've just come out from the courthouse. Is that right?
Yes, that's right, just a few minutes ago.
Wow, so this is incredible, and you must have the very latest news, and we'll get that out to everyone. I think we should just take a moment to review a little bit, briefly, on what's been happening in terms of the whole banning of Galloway. Now, of course, George Galloway is the famous anti-war member of Parliament for respect, and he was going to be speaking in Canada. There had been a lot of excitement, a sold-out tour, at least in some areas. It was pretty much sold out. He's very well-liked and very well-regarded here. And, of course, the government banned him. And the question is, this happened months and months ago now, who banned Galloway, and on what basis did they ban George Galloway?
Well, these are really good questions to be asking, Brennan. As your listeners probably remember, it was over a year ago that we planned the Pan-Canadian speaking tour. There were four cities where George Galloway was going to speak on the question of resisting war from Gaza to Kandahar. And as you said, we had quite a bit of interest, and we were anticipating a very successful tour, as we had the last time, the last few times that he's been here. But we discovered from the British press on March 19th that he had, in fact, been banned and would not be admitted into Canada. And as the days passed, we discovered that it was a decision by the government, by Minister Kenney and his office, to keep George Galloway out of Canada. And what's really striking is in the last few months, there has been disclosure from the government, and we've discovered that our worst suspicions about the involvement in the government were confirmed. In fact, even more so than we expected. The documents that are now publicly available from the federal court show that far from what Mr. Kenney is claiming to the public now, and far from what he's saying in the House of Commons, his office was actually involved in initiating the process that led to the ban of George Galloway and actually drove it. So we're quite alarmed as we look at these documents and are reviewing what the history of events were, that the government would intervene at such a high political level to prevent from speaking in Canada somebody who is not a criminal, who has no criminal record, who didn't commit a crime, who speaks freely in the United States and all over the world, merely because he is critical of our government's opinions. And I think the reason Canadians should be concerned about that is that it fits in with a broader pattern of censorship, of redaction, of trying to cover up or deny access to Canadians to information that may be critical of our government or may be politically embarrassing. And I think this is really troubling because it's a fundamental attack on our free speech rights.
It seemed, reading the Globe and Mail and other newspapers, Galloway seemed to indicate he believed the main reason that he was denied entry to Canada was not the bogus manufactured scare stories about terrorism, but it was the fact that he was going to speak against the war in Afghanistan, and that seemed to rankle the government.
Well, it's interesting when you look at the timeline of events and what the public statements of the government have been, because as time has passed, that story has changed. Their line has changed. And I think finally when their lawyers sort of got in touch with them and said, this is not helpful, what you're saying, they finally adopted one line. And the argument they're trying to make, I think, exists on a couple of fronts. One, they're trying to say that because George Galloway led a convoy that delivered humanitarian aid to the Palestinians in Gaza after Israel's war that killed 1,300 or 1,400 people, that delivery of humanitarian aid represents Galloway's membership of Hamas. These are just absolutely ridiculous and absurd claims. Even the government's lawyers had to acknowledge today, and they recognize that all the money and the diapers and blankets and medical supplies and all those things that went to the elected government of Gaza and to NGOs and charity groups there, all of that went to humanitarian purposes. So even the government recognizes that it was a humanitarian convoy, but they're trying to argue that because it might have gone to something else, that this constitutes membership in the Hamas, and as such, Galloway is inadmissible to Canada. The other argument they're trying to make is that no such decision has been made. They're trying to argue that this is merely a preliminary assessment by the CBSA that was done independently without any influence or contact with Kenny's office. And I continue to be flabbergasted by the response from Kenny, because he continues to say to Parliament, to the media, to the public, that his office had nothing to do with it. That anybody can go online, look up the documents, they've all been uploaded, or a number of them have been uploaded on rabble.ca, that show in print the correspondence between Ali Khan Velshi, who's the director of communications for Mr. Kenny, and high-ranking officials in a number of departments, including citizenship and immigration, the Department of Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness, even the Prime Minister's office and the Privy Council office were involved in this decision, okaying it, saying that it was, we will go ahead with it. So,
yes, no, I'm
just staggered to know that there was so much political involvement on this decision, and then the claim that no decision was made at all. So to make such an argument, I think, is another example of the bad faith that this government has had, and Kenny in particular, in his role as immigration minister. And I think it's going to create all kinds of political problems. It's going to compound the political problems that are facing the government now over questions of secrecy, deceit, cover-up, redaction, that sort of thing, where the government is actively intervening to prevent access to information that Canadians have a right to know about.
There's a reason why Galloway suggested that Canada had some of the last Bush-era holdouts, I think. You know, and the amount of political interference is absolutely staggering, because according to rabble.ca, the publicly accessible documents you've referred to, there seem to be hundreds of them, memos, emails, government letters, articles, and they're all about Velshi's office and Kenny's office trying to get involved with the border officials and administration. And I think, there's a quote here from Mr. Velshi where he said that if the decision came to Mr. Kenny, that I can fairly predict that he will not ever give an entry permit to someone who advocated the kind of things George Galloway advocates. So here we have Velshi getting involved and taking opinions and making a stand and talking to senior officials. So yeah, this is very incredible. You can see a lot of the publicly available documents. Don't take my word for it. Just go read them yourself, like James suggests. It's very interesting. Given this whole turn of affairs and what we saw the government do, I understand that the first actions once Galloway was banned by the government was to mount a legal challenge. So I know that that's a lengthy process and a costly process from which you needed fundraising and so forth. What was the government determining, or what were the findings by Galloway's legal team or by the government in terms of the legality of this whole thing once you launched that legal challenge?
Well, the legal challenge came to a head today insofar as the hearing happened in a federal court in downtown Toronto that's been more than a year in the making. The first time we appeared before the court was to seek an injunction on the decision just days after we learned about it, and that was because Galloway was coming to Canada. We didn't want this to prevent him from entering the country, and the federal court agreed that they would hear it. And unfortunately, at that time, they decided, actually just hours before Galloway was about to step on a plane from New York to come to Toronto, that they wouldn't grant an injunction. Since then, we've been supporting the legal team, which has been before the courts, but we didn't get word until October 31st that the federal court would agree to hear this, and that actually in and of itself was a significant legal victory, because the federal court of Canada usually only agrees to hear 10 to 15% of the cases that apply to be heard. So that in and of itself is a recognition that there is some important issues to be considered here. And then today was a significant milestone for us, because it's been months since October 31st, but finally we've had a chance to make our case, to have our day in court, as it were, and to lay bare the full record about what actually happened. As you mentioned, that quotation from Ali Khan Velshi, there are two important things to note from that. The fact that he preemptively ruled or said that Kenny would not provide Galloway with a temporary residence permit, that is an act of bad faith, because the idea is that they should have a fresh ruling, and if it's overturned, then the minister could intervene in a way that that is fair. So that in and of itself is important and indicates that a decision was made. The second thing is that what Velshi is saying is that he was banned because of what Galloway advocates. That's a question of free expression and free speech. There's nothing criminal about what he advocates. You may disagree with him, you may not like him, but you can't say that someone is inadmissible because of what they advocate. So those kinds of arguments, I think, are important. Those kinds of quotations are important to put a big spotlight on, because it demonstrates that from start to finish, this has been a process of bad faith.
Right. It's very ideologically driven, I would say, politically driven decisions coming up from the federal government. And, I mean, they've taken a lot of heat on related issues. And I think there must be a number of good reasons why the case was heard in the first place. And you've suggested some of them. I think, you know, it's incredible, as some people have pointed out, that, you know, the Harper government would allow someone like Ann Coulter, who was making racist speech, to come into Canada unimpeded. And she continued making a hate speech. And then she canceled her own tour. And there was a big discussion about free speech and whatnot. But the same people that talked about free speech in relation to Ann Coulter did not come to Galloway's defense when he was banned for no reason, you know, banned unjustifiably by the government. I understand that there's been peace activists who have faced difficulty getting into Canada or getting across the border. Galloway has faced difficulties, and it seems that the government is basically being selective as to who they let in and what they call free speech and who's allowed to speak on what issues.
Well, absolutely, and I think that's another important argument to look at. Who are the free speech hypocrites in the debate about free speech in Canada? And I think it is the Conservatives. The biggest threat to free speech in Canada is the Conservative government and their backers, who continue to undermine issues or campaigns or causes that articulate perspectives that are critical of Canadian foreign policy. And you can name a whole list of them. You can think about the intervention around Israeli Apartheid Week that happened on campuses, the cutting of funding to the Canadian Arab Federation, the cutting of funding and the ending of a 32-year relationship with Kairos, a group of Christian churches who do humanitarian work abroad, the rerouting of money for away from UNRWA, the Works and Relief Agency that administer health and social services in 9 Palestinian refugee camps. You can see on all these fronts that the government has intervened, or their backers have supported attempts to thwart or stifle or limit speech or expression on all these issues. And it's pretty ironic to hear people like Ezra Levant, a self-styled free speech martyr, who wants to stand up for Ann Coulter so she can spew Islamophobic, racist remarks about the Arab Muslim communities and all kinds of other groups, yet they remain silent when their own government intervenes and, I would argue, abuse their power to deny entry into Canada of a sitting member of the British Parliament. It's absolute hypocrisy.
I think that's becoming demonstrably clear, and the warnings that were coming early on from things like the cutting of funding to the Canadian Arab Federation have really spiraled. And then we see the banning of Galloway, and we see them trying to criminalize, for example, discussion of Israel Apartheid Week, and so on. So I think it's very important the kind of work that you're doing in relation to Galloway and allowing us to actually host speakers and organize events and not have them canceled by the government. And I'm thinking there's been some interesting legal discussions today that have occurred during this hearing. And where do you think it is the places to go now? What are you going to be doing? What's Galloway's team going to be doing? What are you looking towards as part of the next series of actions?
Well, from a legal perspective, it's sort of a wait-and-see situation. The justice reserved his decision today, which means he'll take a few weeks to think about it and to examine all the evidence, and then we'll make hopefully a thoughtful ruling about the facts in the case and what should happen. We're hoping that the justice will acknowledge that the decision was made and that it should be reversed, because what we'd like to do is to invite Mr. Galloway to come back. The invitation remains from the first time, so that we can organize a speaking tour where he can speak to Canadians and engage with them in person, one-on-one, and talk about Afghanistan, Israel, Palestine, all these other issues. So I think from the legal point of view, we will we'll wait and see what happens. But from a political point of view, we'll continue to campaign and to raise questions wherever we can about the very obvious gap between what the government claims its role was in this and what the facts show. And I think that's something we have to think about. Any interaction people have with Kenny or the government, they should be calling them out. How do you explain this contradiction between what you say was your involvement and what the record clearly shows to be the case? It's just an appalling it's an appalling situation to see the government deny in Parliament, to the media, in public, that they had any kind of involvement, and then to read pages, dozens and dozens of pages of emails that go back and forth between the highest levels of government strategizing about how to keep Galloway out of Canada, how to spin it in the media, and then to see it take effect. This is the kind of thing that I think politically, those of us who are involved in peace and justice struggles or who want to support free speech and civil liberties should be thinking about how do we call the government to account on this and make sure that this issue doesn't go away.
Absolutely. And when people want to learn about this and follow the campaign, is there a website or a phone number that they can get in touch with the contact and see what's happening?
Sure. The website that we've set up right now, actually we've had it set up since last year, it's called defendfreespeech.ca. And we've tried to make that a bit of a clearinghouse of information about the case and any political developments, news articles. But I can also suggest rabble.ca is a great place where people have done some really good investigative journalism and have examined the court documents. And so I think looking at that, looking at those sites for updates will be a great place to start. And it's where you'll find more information about any developments that happen in the weeks to come.
Wow. Well, thanks. I know you just got out of the courthouse. It's been a big day. You've been organizing things all week. There was a rally on Monday, and then you had the rally in the courthouse, and then you went to the hearing itself. So you've been very busy, and we really appreciate you taking the time for our listeners to get this out, and we'll be putting this online so it can be distributed. We thank you very much for taking the time to do this, James.
Thanks, Brennan. I appreciate the time you gave us.